Well, tonight we get to get into the topic of the meaning of Passover. And we need to open up with 1 Corinthians 5:7 again, which has been our theme verse for this whole mini-series of teaching. And we're going to look at it a little closer tonight. And then we're going to look at it even closer on Saturday when we do the Day in the Word. So some things tonight are just going to lay a foundation for Saturday. And there will be more details even yet to come at the Day in the Word. So, Bob, you said there were 60 people going to come?
Yeah.
Wow, that's exciting. So there'll be things that I'm sure that you'll be able to share with people that haven't been at all these sessions, and you'll get to have a little head start, I think. So let's read 1 Corinthians 5:7 first. Purge out therefore the old leaven, that ye may be a new lump, as ye are unleavened. For even Christ our Passover is sacrificed for us. I love that part about the new lump, and I'm going to talk about it a little bit later. The first phrase there, purge out therefore the old leaven, that you may be a new lump. For even Christ our Passover is sacrificed for us. And the Aramaic says, the Passover lamb is Christ. And the word lamb there is actually missing. So it's like an ellipsis. You have to supply it. Even Christ, our Passover what? He's our Passover lamb. So there's two elements that are going to come up throughout the evening tonight. And the first one is about the lamb and who the lamb is and why we need a lamb. And then secondly, it's about leaven. It says purge out the old leaven. So what does leaven have to do with anything? So those are the two themes throughout the teaching tonight are going to be about the lamb and the leaven, or unleavened. And we're going to have three views that will come up tonight also. First, we're going to look at the Old Testament and see how they instituted the Passover to begin with and some of the key elements in that. And then we're going to look at the first century just briefly, because that will be covered on Saturday in more detail. But then I'm also going to just show you a little bit about how there was a progression of traditions that got into the Passover. And by the time you got to the medieval times, they came up with a whole formula called the Haggadah, which is what we know today as the Seder. You've heard the word Seder, right? And the way the Jews celebrate Passover today is a very rigid formula. And there's some interesting things that they threw in. Like, there is even an egg that they put in the oven and roast to where it's harder than a rock, and they put the egg on the plate. And nobody, like all the rabbis and all the commentaries and everything, don't know where they came up with that egg. And nobody knows what it means. Yeah! It came in through Easter tradition. So they don't have bunnies, but they do have an egg. And they have 4 cups of wine that are served throughout the meal, and each one means something, and there's no precedent for that. But one of the most interesting traditions is that they leave a chair empty for Elijah. Mm-hmm. And if Elijah doesn't come, because it says in Malachi that Elijah will be the forerunner of the Messiah, so if Elijah doesn't come to the Passover, they know that next year they're going to have to celebrate another Passover. Mm-hmm. And so there are all sorts of things that came in with tradition, and we'll see how that affects our lives too when traditions come in. So first we're going to look at the Old Testament, and we need to look at Exodus chapter 12. This is the record of the first Passover, and it was after all of the plagues that happened in Egypt that Moses caused when Pharaoh was hardening his heart, remember? And he wouldn't let the people go. And so then there would be one plague after another. And all those plagues had to do with the gods that the Egyptians were worshiping. And they were directly against the gods. And you get down to the last one. And let's read. Exodus chapter 12, verse 3. Speak ye unto all the congregation of Israel, saying, in the tenth day of this month they shall take to them every man a lamb, according to the house of their fathers, a lamb for a house. And if the household be too little for a lamb, let him and his neighbor next unto his house take it according to the number of the souls. Every man according to his eating shall make your count for the lamb. Later on, that solidified into a tradition that there were 10 people for a lamb. So if your household had 10 people, you'd only need one lamb. But this is just the first establishment of it. So it doesn't say 10 here, right? I'm trying to show you a little bit throughout this teaching today how different traditions slip in. Because the word says, just according to the number of souls. And they ate lamb all the time. So they knew how many people a lamb would feed, right? So, and I love this part about you go to your neighbor if you don't have a big enough household. Mm-hmm. So they really brought the households together for this celebration. Okay, let's go on. Verse 5. Your lamb shall be without blemish, a male of the first year. Ye shall take it out from the sheep or from the goats. Wow. I always thought it was just lamb. But here it says you could take a goat, too. Later, though, it became solidified that the lamb was the picture that God wanted to portray, because there's so many other verses that talk about how Jesus Christ was the lamb. And this is the type of Jesus Christ. The type means that it's like a blow, where you get a picture of what the reality was going to be in the future. So Passover and what happened during the time of Moses is a type. And Jesus Christ is the fulfillment of it, or the reality of what it's talking about here in this chapter. So it says a male of the first year. That's how we know that Jesus Christ's ministry had to be only 1 year. It couldn't be 3 years like they... Most people believe that it's 3 years. But it needed to be 1 year because the lamb was of the first year. That could mean any part of the year, or it extended like a couple months after the year. And when Jesus Christ is baptized, it's in February, and his crucifixion is in April of the following year. So he is considered a lamb of the first year. And he had to be without blemish. So we pretty much know what that means, is that there were no spots, no scars, no torn places, no disease. And because Jesus Christ's blood was sinless and he was perfect in all of his ways, then he qualifies to be a lamb without blemish. Now this is interesting, verse 6. And ye shall keep it until the 14th day of the same month. And the whole assembly of the congregation of Israel shall kill it in the evening. What day did they say that they would choose the lamb? Go back to verse 3. The 10th. And they would kill it on the 14th. Now that is a key thing to remember, because that tradition carried on into the first century, that the choosing of the lamb was on the 10th. They kept it all the way until the 14th. Okay. And you shall kill it in the evening. So the evening of the 14th would mean in the afternoon, because the days went from sunset to sunset. So the 14th was actually start, like say the 14th is a Wednesday, the day would actually start on Tuesday, what we would call Tuesday evening, and go to Wednesday evening. So sunset to sunset was considered a day. So that's when it says kill it in the evening, it would have meant the evening of that day that's still the 14th. So it's before sunset. And the Hebrew right there actually says between the two evenings. And that was a Hebrew term that when the sun started to go down in the afternoon, that's what they called evening. And so between the two evenings would mean from 3 to 6 in the afternoon. Okay, does that make sense?
Yep.
When the sun began to fall, they called it evening. Well, you know, our evening is like after the sun sets, right? So it's, we have to know the different cultural things in order to understand this subject. We need to know that they reckon their days from sunset to sunset. That's a really key thing to understand. Otherwise, none of the dates make any sense at all. All right, then he tells them, verse 7, they shall take of the blood and strike it on the two side posts and on the upper door posts of the houses wherein they shall eat. And they shall eat the flesh in that night, roast with fire and unleavened bread, and with bitter herbs shall they eat it. Eat not of it raw, or nor sodden it all with water, but roast with fire, his head with his legs, and with the pertinence thereof. Now, what's pertinence? It's the inside. What they did was that they would take all of the stuff inside the intestines out of it, but then they put the intestines back in. So the lamb was roasted whole. But if you roast it with all that stuff inside the intestines, then it permeates the meat and you can't eat it. You know that with deer, right, Stephen? You have to take the insides out in order for it to not be rancid. So, but the essence of it is that it had to be whole and roasted, not boiled, like raw or sodden with water. Now, part of that had to do with the fact that the Egyptians, in their idolatry and their worship of other gods, they often boiled the sacrifices. Mm-hmm. And it also had to do with the fact that Jesus Christ fulfilled all the offerings, right? Now, this is prior to the law. And when we studied the red thread, we went over all the different kinds of offerings in the law. There's the sin offering, the burnt offering, the peace offering, the trespass offering. There's one other one. But this is before the law, okay? So what I want us to see tonight is that the picture of the lamb is actually a sum total of all the offerings. And the way that they celebrated Passover was a composite of all the things that they were going to break down later in the law, like the sin offering. He was a sin offering because Corinthians says he became sin for us, right? He became the sin offering. He was a burnt offering because when they got done eating it, they burnt the rest of the carcass. We're going to read that in a minute. Verse 10, and you shall let nothing of it remain until the morning, and that which remaineth of it until the morning you shall burn with fire. So it becomes like a burnt offering too. And it was also like a peace offering, because the peace offering is really the only offering under the law where the people could partake of the offering. And in this case, with the lamb, they're eating it, right? They didn't just burn it on an altar. They roasted it and then actually ate the offering. And so you see how it combines all the different aspects of the offerings. And you could do a whole study just on that subject alone right there. But what I wanted us to see was, first of all, God wanted to get the Egypt out of them. He wanted them to do this so that they would make a cut with all their traditions and the things that had crept in from being a part of the Egyptian culture, so that they would be ready to go to the promised land. And so there had to be a division there of saying, all right, this is over, now we're going to do this. And of course, the blood on the doorposts was key, which we have also talked about already, about without the shedding of blood, there's no remission. And that when they put the blood on the doorposts, then that was what God was going to look at. He was going to look at the blood of the sacrifice on the doorposts. And that was a really important. So here's what he was going to do because of this blood on the doorposts. Verse 11. And thus you shall eat it, with your loins girded, your shoes on your feet, and your staff in your hand, and you shall eat it in haste. It is the Lord's Passover. For I will pass through the land of Egypt this night, and will smite all the firstborn in the land of Egypt, both man and beast. And against all the gods of Egypt, I will execute judgment. I am the Lord. So this last plague is really a summary or a sum total against God says, I am going to do this to show you that I am against all the gods of Egypt. There's not one that I missed there, even though there may be some subcategories down here somewhere that I didn't exactly do a plague against. But this will show you that I really am the Lord Jehovah. And verse 13, that is the key. And the blood shall be to you for a token. A what?
A token.
Upon the houses where you are. And when I see the blood, I will pass over you. And the plague shall not be upon you to destroy you when I smite the land of Egypt. So that's how we get the name Passover. The Lord passed over them because he saw the blood on the doorpost. Verse 14, and this day shall be unto you for a memorial, and you shall keep it a feast to the Lord throughout your generations. You shall keep it a feast by an ordinance forever. And then he goes on and says some really interesting thing. 7 days shall you eat unleavened bread. Even the first day ye shall put leaven out of your houses. For whatsoever eateth leavened bread from the first day until the seventh, that soul shall be cut off from Israel. Whoa, that's a heavy judgment. Just not you know, the difference of eating leavened bread versus unleavened bread. So there must be something about this leavened bread thing here. Why did he say they had to eat it for 7 days afterwards? Questions to ponder. Verse 16, and in the first day there shall be a holy convocation, and in the seventh day there shall be a holy convocation to you. No manner of work shall be done in them, save that which every man must eat, and that only may be done of you. Now this means that, okay, the lamb is killed on the 14th, right? The 15th would be a holy day, like a Sabbath, where they couldn't do any work, and it would be a holy convocation, they call it, King James. That day was a holy day, and then the last day of the feast was a holy day. So the 15th would be a holy day, and the 21st would be a holy day. And that was an ordinance that no matter what other day the regular Sabbath fell on, you would have special holiday, like holy day, right? We're coming up on a holy day, and that's where we get the name holiday. So that's also very important to remember for the future when we're going to have the Day of the Word, because the key dates are the 10th, the 14th, and the 15th was a holy day. So they ate unleavened bread for 7 days. Verse 17, and you shall observe the feast of unleavened bread. So those 7 days after Passover became known as the Feast of Unleavened Bread, because that was the primary thing that happened during that time. Now, from the time of this establishing of the Passover all the way through to the first century, they really didn't know what the unleavened bread was all about. They just did it. In a lot of the teachings. It had to do with, you know, that they left Egypt in haste so they could leaven the bread and bake it that day and all these other things like that. But God never does anything like this without a purpose. It's just that it was a type. It was a shadow, right? So the shadow wasn't really revealed until actually when Paul in Corinthians talks about what the leaven really was all about. So let's jump down now to verse 26. It shall come to pass when your children shall say unto you, what mean ye by this service? That ye shall say, it is the sacrifice of the Lord's Passover, who passed over the houses of the children of Israel in Egypt, when he smote the Egyptians and delivered our houses, or our households. And the people bowed the head and worshipped. One of the most wonderful things about the Jews, no matter what you can say about their traditions and different things that they did, they were very obedient in many categories. When God said, do this as an ordinance forever, well, they did it, you know. And in fact, I was reading about a Passover that King Josiah did later on, and he goes throughout the whole land and gets rid of all the idols and Baal and Ashtaroth and all these different things, cleanses the whole land so that the people can celebrate Passover. That's really great. He took it literally that this was a time to get the idolatry out of your life and then really understand that the blood is what gives forgiveness of sins. That's what the Lamb represents. Now remember last time too, we were talking about redemption, how it's out of something to something, right? Mm-hmm. So they had to be delivered out of the bondage of Israel to become a people, God's people, in the promised land, to be able to enter into the promised land, right? God never intended for them to wander for 40 years in the wilderness. He wanted them to go in the promised land right away. And that's the same thing with us. He wants us to go over Jordan and get in the promised land right away. We're not supposed to be wandering around. But it was from sin to justification, from sins to righteousness. So you see that it incorporates all of what I was talking about the last time, too. Now look at John chapter 1, verse 29. I told you that because this sacrifice of the lamb was before the law, the lamb really represents all the different offerings. So the purpose of some of the offerings too were for atonement, which we also talked about last time, about relationship, you know, bringing back people to God. That's what atonement is reconciliation. And so it's about like being strangers, or, you know, having enemies, right? We were enemies, and then now we're reconciled. So it's from being an enemy to being reconciled. And the offerings also were a testimony. Whenever there was a burnt offering, it was a testimony that the person who offered that offering would be accepted. So when you brought, say you brought a lamb and you were going to offer it, the burning of it and the smoke going up signified God's acceptance of you, you know, of your offering. And that caused great thanksgiving. You know, so this whole celebration of the Passover was a very joyful time. It was a time for them to gather together and to remember how God had delivered them so awesomely when he delivered them out of Egypt. So there's acceptance, atonement, thanksgiving, forgiveness of sins, justification. So there's all this great stuff that's all tied in with what the offering means. So that's a little bit about why there had to be a lamb, and in the Old Testament, how it all got started, because of course we know that when the angel of death passed over and saw the blood, then the firstborn were not killed. And in Egypt, the firstborn of all the families, so human beings and animals, were killed. And that Israel, if they obeyed and had put the blood on the doorposts, then they were saved from that. So now, what happened in the first century? And again, I'm going to tell you a little bit more on Saturday about this. But remember those key dates now, okay? The 10th is the choosing of the lamb. And what's so interesting is that Jesus Christ is the type of the lamb, right? So he could have fulfilled only what the original Passover had. But what God did and how he actually became the lamb that year was he actually fulfilled all of the oral traditions and the traditions that got associated with Passover during the first century. So some of the additions that happened were that when they chose the lamb, after they chose the lamb, they added a big procession in, and that's what we call the triumphal entry, when Jesus Christ rides in on the colt and they're saying, "Blessed is Hosanna, blessed is he who comes in the name of the Lord." And the essence of that whole triumphal entry is the choosing of the lamb. Like the people chose Jesus to be the lamb that year. And then another thing that they added in later was that they took the lamb and they put the lamb in the temple, and everybody and anybody could come and examine the lamb to make sure it really didn't have any spot or blemish. And so from Monday and Tuesday during that last week, that's what happened, when one by one the Pharisees, the Sadducees, the Herodians, all these different groups of people came and examined Jesus Christ and gave him the hardest questions they could come up with, and he passed every single one of those tests and proved that he was a lamb who was without spot and blemish. And then the third thing that happened was when it said back in Exodus that they should not have any leaven in their houses and should begin the first day eating unleavened bread. When they ate the lamb, they should eat unleavened bread, right? Well, they carried that further and went through a lot of technical things about what you had to do to cleanse your house of leaven. And so actually starting around the 10th, and especially the 11th and 12th and 13th, the people were busy making sure there was no leaven in their houses. And they had a whole ritual of how to do that.
Can you explain leaven?
Yeah, I'm going to in a little bit. I'm putting tidbits out there so you go, "What's leaven? Why is leaven important?" All right. Anyway, that was another thing that happened, was the cleansing of the leaven. So after the triumphal entry, the first thing that Jesus Christ does is he goes into the temple and he overturns the tables of the money changers. And he says, "You've made my house a den of thieves." And so that's his cleansing of his house, where he goes and he cleanses the temple, because that's the house of God, right? And another tradition associated with the cleansing of the leaven is that the very last night before Passover, so that would be the 13th, the evening of the 13th, right before the 14th starts, right? That the man who was the head of the household would go throughout his house in silence, examining the house to make sure there was no leaven. And the examination that Jesus went through with the trials, the most all of it was he did not ever answer anything. It was done in silence. He was silent the entire time. So those are just a few of the things that happened. I wanted to refer you to that teaching that I did. It was on May 16th, 2008, called Jesus Christ, Our Passover Lamb. And it's on the website. So if you have time this week to go look at that and listen to it again, it'll give a lot of more background. Okay, what about the leaven? Go back to 1 Corinthians 5. This is what I thought was so interesting. 1 Corinthians 5, 7. Purge out therefore the old leaven, that you may be a new lump. Okay, leaven. We think of leaven as those little packages that are, you know, Fleischmann's yeast, right? They're little yellow packages, and you dump it into your bread dough, and you mix it all up, and poof, you get risen bread, right? Well, that's not exactly how it was in the first century. And it really isn't talking about yeast. It's talking about the old dough. When you mix water with any kind of grain like flour, wheat flour, or barley flour, you mix water in it, it starts fermenting. And as it ferments, it starts to become more and more rancid, you know. But when you want to make a new batch of dough, you take a little bit of the old leaven and you put it in a new batch, and then that permeates the whole batch of new dough and goes throughout it and makes it to rise. There's lots of things that make bread rise, like baking soda and baking powder, you know, that we use. But that's how they made their bread rise, was they allowed the dough to ferment. And then they would just take the old dough, put a little bit of that into the new dough. Okay? The Easton's Bible Dictionary says, the remnant of the dough from the preceding baking, which had fermented and become acid. So there was a point where it was good for the next batch, right? Okay? So that's what it's talking about. Purge out the old leaven. So the old leaven means that old piece of dough that you were going to use for the new batch. It says, no, you can't use that old stuff in a new lump. You have to be a totally new lump of dough. Now, the definition of it is, and what leaven symbolizes, the main point is its pervasive nature, is that if you put it in something, it's going to contaminate and corrupt every part of whatever you put in it. So if you only take a tiny, tiny little piece of old dough and you put it in a new batch, you are going to have that whole new batch get filled with the old stuff. And it symbolizes that the nature of corruption and the defilement of sin and how it works. And I want to read something from Smith's Bible Dictionary, which has a really good summary of this in the article on leaven. It says, various substances were known to have fermenting qualities. But the ordinary leaven consisted of a lump of old dough in a high state of fermentation. So that's what I already explained. Which was mixed into the mass of dough prepared for baking. And he adds, the most prominent idea associated with leaven is connected with the corruption which it had undergone and which communicated to bread in the process of fermentation. In another dictionary in the section on leaven, it says, leaven symbolizes corruption, defilement, and sin. Now I'm going to show you that the main things that leaven represents are hypocrisy and legalism. So we need to just go briefly and look at Matthew chapter 16. Because God is always consistent with how he uses words, and he does not use them lightly. And that's part of what's so fun about studying the Bible, is that when you do see something and the meaning of something, it has a very consistent usage all the way through. And if God does change it, then he lets you know that he's changing it. And so this is going to bless you, I think, about the leaven of the Pharisees. Matthew 16, verse 6. Then Jesus said unto them, take heed and beware of the leaven of the Pharisees and of the Sadducees. Ah, they got leaven? Okay. And they reason among themselves, saying, it's because we have taken no bread. Which when Jesus perceived, he said unto them, O ye of little faith, why reason ye among yourselves because you have brought no bread? Do you not yet understand, neither remember the 5 loaves of the 5,000 and how many baskets you took up, neither the 7 loaves of the 4,000 and how many baskets you took up? How is it, verse 11, that you do not understand that I spake it not to you concerning bread, that you should beware of the leaven of the Pharisees and of the Sadducees? Then, verse 12, they understood how that he bade them not beware of the leaven of bread, but of the doctrine of the Pharisees and of the Sadducees. So you would think here that the leaven is the wrong doctrine, right? Luke chapter 12. The thing about the Pharisees was that they were notorious for saying all the right things and doing something completely opposite. So it really wasn't that they had wrong doctrine. It's that they had hypocrisy. They were two-faced. They said one thing and did something else. And that's exactly what Luke 12, verse 1 says. And it's about the same time, same situation. In the meantime, when there were gathered together an innumerable multitude of people, insomuch that they trod one upon another, he began to say unto his disciples, first of all, beware ye of the leaven of the Pharisees, which is
hypocrisy.
Oh, wow. Now, what's hypocrisy? The literal in Aramaic is to receive faces. Or take faces. Sometimes it has to do with that you put faces on, like a mask, right? Mm-hmm. So that is one way you could be a hypocrite, is that you mask yourself and you put on a different face. But the majority of what it's talking about is that you receive faces. So the thing about the Pharisees was that they'd say, oh, Ern, I like your face, but I don't like this one over here. And they received faces. They said they played favorites. And they had great respect of persons. So if you wash your hands and you did all the stuff and you had everything and all your P's and Q's in order, then you were accepted. But if you didn't, then you weren't. And there's lots of different ways that you can manifest hypocrisy. So I leave it to you to think about what that means in our time, because the second part of it, the legalism, is what starts a person to be a hypocrite. And that's what it's talking about in Galatians chapter 5. The whole first part of chapter 5 is talking about how Christ has become of no effect to you if you don't walk by grace, right? For verse 6, for in Jesus Christ neither circumcision avails anything nor uncircumcision, but faith that is energized or worketh by love. You did run well. Who did hinder you that you should not obey the truth? This persuasion cometh not of him that calleth you. It's not from God. that they got into a bunch of legalism in the Galatian church. It says, verse 9, a little leaven leaveneth the whole lump. It's like a proverb almost, where they understood what happened when you put a piece of old dough into a new batch, that it would end up pervading the whole thing. And that's what happened in the Galatian church, where the legalism of having to do works came in and started filtering through the entire church, where it was no more about grace and what Christ accomplished and all that he had done for them, but it became about, no, you've got to work for it. And lots of other things in Galatians, of course. So you have this combination of the reason why the Pharisees were used as beware the leaven of the Pharisees, because they were so legalistic that they totally missed the heart of the law. They got so focused on the details of everything that they forgot to see that all of those things that they were celebrating and the traditions were pointing to the Messiah that was to come. And so they weren't talking about that at all. They were only talking about how many times were you supposed to wash the cup and wash the hands. And then, you know, stand in the marketplace and beat your breast and go, oh, I'm a sinner! And all kinds of things that they were doing. The legalism then led to hypocrisy, where they really were not, it wasn't just that they were trying to base their life on works, but they were playing favorites and being two-faced, saying, this is what the law says, and doing exactly the opposite. The example is like with the widows. What they would do is tell people that you don't have to take care of your elderly mother or your father. You can just pay a gift called Corban to the offering, and then you can go your merry way, and you don't have to worry about them at all. They took a little tiny thing of the law that said you could have a gift called Corban, and they made it into a way to go against taking care of your family, which was the heart of the law. You know, it was part of the law, honor your father and your mother. So you could see that they actually took that commandment of honoring your father and mother and turned it totally around to be, no, you don't have to do that. But it sounded good, right? So now go back to 1 Corinthians, and we're going to see something. So we'll start over by going back to verse 6. Chapter 5, verse 6. Your glorying is not good. Know ye not that a little leaven leaveneth the whole lump? Oh, we get that now, right?
Right.
A little piece of dough leavens the whole lump. Purge out therefore the old leaven, that you may be a new lump, a brand new lump, as you are unleavened. So unleavened means absolutely none of this old stuff, the old dough. For even Christ, our Passover, is sacrificed for us. Our Passover lamb is sacrificed for us. Well, we get that now too, okay? We get the fact that it had to be a lamb, it had to have the shedding of blood, blah, blah, blah. Right. Verse 8, therefore, let us keep the feast. Oh, I thought that we didn't have to keep feasts. Well, we don't. We don't have to do the whole Passover thing and have seders and eggs on the plate and four cups of wine and all that stuff. We don't have to do that. But we do need to keep the feast in our heart, where we keep the meaning of the feast in our heart. And this is what we're supposed to do. Not with the old leaven, neither with the leaven of malice and wickedness, but with the unleavened bread, is in italics, right? That means it's added there for our understanding. But with the unleavened something of sincerity and truth. So I think we need to know what these things are, right? What's malice and wickedness, and what's sincerity and truth? the basic thing that I want us to get out of this teaching today is that we cannot have old leaven in our life. When we can't try to change the old man nature and make it new, all it will end up doing is pervading our whole life. We have to declare it dead and gone. And we have to live with the unleavened bread and what that means, what the unleavened bread means. Now, we'll look at the leaven of malice. Remember I told you that the two primary things are legalism and hypocrisy, right?
Yeah.
So malice is evil habits, and wickedness is evil coming out in word or deed. Malice is evil habits, and wickedness is the evil coming out in word or deed. And that's basically legalism and hypocrisy. Evil habits, where you say one thing, but you do something else. People do it all the time. They go to church and put on their church face. Everything is there. Yeah, I'm so glad to see you. And inside, they're hurting so badly, and they won't admit it, you know? Isn't that hypocrisy? Mm-hmm. Keep your finger right here. Look at Psalm 139. This is just one verse in the Old Testament about really what they were supposed to be doing all those 7 days of unleavened bread, is that they were supposed to be searching their hearts to see what is it I need to change? What is it I need to do? Verse 23, "Search me, O God, and know my heart. Try me and know my thoughts, and see if there be any wicked way in me. And lead me in the way everlasting." Just Psalm 139, 23, and 24. "See if there be any wicked way in me." So it's also not about, you know, "Oh me, I'm a sinner." See, that's also the Pharisaical way of doing it. That's just walking in condemnation. But the true way of what I'm going to talk to you about, sincerity and truth, is where you examine your life and ask God to show you, where are those evil habits? Where are the places where I start going into legalism? Where is the places where I say one thing and don't do it? And we are to examine ourselves, and that's what the unleavened bread represented, was I'll eat this unleavened bread and go, oh, it doesn't have leaven in it. So I'm supposed to look in my own life to see where's the leaven in my heart so that I can get rid of it and be a new lump. Now, that's why leaven doesn't really mean sin, because we have forgiveness of sins, right? And that's part of searching your heart too. But you never get rid of sin completely. But you can get rid of legalism and hypocrisy. You can. You can just totally wipe it out and never have it again. And if it starts creeping back in there, then you go, no, I'm not doing that. So go back to 1 Corinthians. We're supposed to keep the feast with the unleavened blank. And you can fill in bread there, right? But it's bigger than that. It's that when the figure of speech ellipsis is there, the emphasis is on the missing word. So it's not really even about it being unleavened. It's that it's bread. And what does the bread mean? So then you go, oh, that reminds me of communion. What does bread mean? Because communion, you only have bread and wine, right? You don't have a lamb. The lamb, I'm sure Jeannie taught this last Sunday about the communion, and that the two things, the bread is to represent the broken body, and it's for our healing, and blood is for the wine, represents blood, and it's for the remission of sins. So you have the bread, and you go, oh, bread. And then Jesus Christ said, I am the bread of life, right? Oh, he's the bread of life. He is really the only one who can help me not be legalistic. If I have my eyes focused on him and my relationship with God through him, I won't get into that stuff. So, sincerity. The Greek word means to be judged by the light of the sun, or have purity. It's like the sunshine comes on it and it exposes everything. And truth, there is, it means unconcealed, not hidden, or in other words, truth out in the open. And you put those things together, we're to celebrate the feast with the unleavened bread of sincerity or purity, where God is exposing, he's shining the light on our lives to expose whatever place needs to get exposed. And then it ends up not being concealed or hidden anymore. Truth out in the open. So we can live our lives with truth out in the open. So, going back to the idea of communion, I want to just go over to 1 Corinthians 11:26. The bread is the body and the wine is the blood. Verse 26, for as often as you eat this bread and you drink this cup, you shall show the Lord's death till he come. Wherefore, whosoever shall eat this bread and drink this cup of the Lord unworthily shall be guilty of the body and the blood of the Lord. But let a man examine himself, and so let him eat of that bread and drink of that cup. For he that eateth and drinketh unworthily eateth and drinketh damnation to himself. Whoa. We need to know what eating and drinking unworthily means then, right? And it explains it right there. Not discerning the Lord's body. Not discerning the fact that he really is the unleavened bread. Just like he's the lamb, he's the unleavened bread. And he is the only way that you can have a life without legalism and hypocrisy. Otherwise, it will always be about religion. Rules and regulations and do this and don't do that and do this and go here and this work at that thing. Remember we talked about how it's out of bondage to relationship, right? Mm-hmm. Well, forgiveness of sins and healing is based on God's sacrifice of his son and how we are bought with a price. It's not even based on the fact that God is a forgiving God. He had to pay this price so we could have sincerity and truth. So we could walk in sincerity and truth. Because he knew it was impossible without it. We would always be having that old dough pervading our whole life. And we could never really live an unleavened lifestyle without Christ. That's why we have to discern the Lord's body. And when we go to communion, we need to examine our hearts. Let the sun shine in. Let God expose things and say, where is the Egypt in my life? Where is the idolatry that I don't want to let go of? Where's the things that I need to change so that I can have my truth be out in the open and live my life free from that and be a new lump? See? Now you know why I like the new lump. Oh, gosh. All right. One more verse. 1 Peter chapter 1. Okay. 1 Peter chapter 1. This kind of just summarizes everything we talked about. And gives us something to walk out the door with. 1 Peter 1, verse 18. For as much as you know that you are not redeemed with corruptible things, we know that we weren't redeemed with corruptible things as silver and gold, from your vain conversation received by tradition from your fathers, all of the tradition stuff that was received and passed down through the law, you know, was vain. It was vanity. It never could redeem them because it was always corruptible. But with the precious blood of Christ, as of a lamb without blemish and without spot, who verily was foreordained before the foundation of the world, but was manifest in these last times for you. When it says Jesus Christ our Passover is sacrificed for us, it's on our behalf. He did it for us. On our behalf. And God foreordained that from before the foundation of the world. But it's happened. And it's something that we can have in our lives. And we can live with this understanding every single day. We don't have to wait for once a year we do communion. Right? Okay, verse 21. Who by him do believe in God that raised him up from the dead and gave him glory, that your faith and hope might be in God. Seeing you have purified your souls in obeying the truth through the Spirit unto